Of course not. Don't be ridiculous.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
Sit on it.
Hello, Newman.
Missed it by that much.
Giggity, giggity. Giggity, goo.
Dynamite!
He's on the fonts. Huh? Hey!
I see nothing.
Would you believe it?
Let's hug it out, bitch.
Sure as I am the only gay in this village.
You got it, dude.
Nanu, nanu.
No. Yes.
Oh, my God. They killed Kenny. You bastard!
Are we having fun yet?
Baby, you're the great.
Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, this episode of the Nerd Bomber podcast has been filmed in front of a live studio audience. I am your friend Claude, here again with...
Just Jamie.
And on the show today, we are going to be discussing our personal sitcom favorites, as well as the main event of today's show, our Mount Rushmore of all-time sitcom greats. Jamie... why don't you take it away?
So yeah, it kind of occurred to me that, because I've been watching a lot of single camera comedies lately, binging Community, watching a lot of Parks and Rec, it occurred to me that the classic, the traditional sitcom is a little bit of a dying breed or genre. With the rise of single camera comedies, and then this interesting double-sided blade of super expensive prestige television and super cheap reality TV, the mid-budget sitcom that's, quote, taped in front of a live studio audience is just not at the level that it used to be.
Right.
The actual quality of these two shows aside, okay, I'm not talking about how good they are. The last of that sort of dying breed was really Two and a Half Men and then The Big Bang Theory, in terms of shows that a lot of people watched. The multi-camera sitcoms like this still exist, but they don't have the ratings influence, they don't have the cultural influence that they've had for, like, the last 60 years. They tend to come and go and nobody notices. I don't really think there are any must-see sitcoms presently, and I don't really see any coming around the corner. So it's just interesting that we are, I think, witnessing the slow death of the genre. Now, as a tangent, there's kind of a side category of tween sitcoms that's still going strong because it's one of the main focuses of Disney and Nickelodeon. What's interesting, as a parent anyway, from my perspective, is that you grow up with these things, so you're familiar with a few of them. In my case, it would be, in probably both of ours, it would be shows like Salute Your Shorts or Hey Dude or Clisser Explains It All.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get older and a bunch of stuff passes by that you don't pay attention to, like That's So Raven or Zack and Cody or even Stevens. And then as a parent, you swing back into that world. Most of these shows, most of these tween sitcoms are utter garbage. But I am going to give kudos to four. iCarly, Sam and Cat, Good Luck Charlie, and Henry Danger. Those are all legitimately funny shows that made me laugh. I think the best of them is a show called Henry Danger. I was almost tempted to put that on my personal favorites list, and it's a current tween sitcom.
Wow.
But I didn't. I'm coming back from that tangent of sort of like the side category of tween sitcoms that are still going strong. But we're not really talking about those with this episode of the podcast. We're kind of focused on the traditional primetime network sitcom. So I put together a little Mount Rushmore of sitcoms, and I tried to base it on objective criteria. So it had 4 points. One was its ratings. Two was how long it was on in terms of like how many years, how many seasons. Three was its critical success. And four is the least objective of these, which is its cultural footprint. So how much nostalgia is there for the show? That's a little harder to put your finger on, so I just ask the dear listener to trust me. Now, when I started making lists in all these categories, 10 sitcoms definitely rose above the pack. Now, of course, everybody has their favorites, and everybody has ones that they think should be included, so... you know, there's nearly infinite numbers of sitcoms that have aired over the years, so I'm not going to mention them all. Shows like The Bob Newhart Show, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Dick Van Dyke, Taxi, Home Improvement, Golden Girls, Laverne and Shirley, etc. There's infinite. That's not quite infinite. I'm using hyperbole. But there are a lot of sitcoms. And a lot of them are very good. But like I said, 10 sort of started to rise above the pack when I started to break it down by these four criteria. So first I will give you the 6 out of 10 that did not make the Mount Rushmore. All right? Am I making sense so far?
I'm with you.
All right. So here are the 6 that didn't make the Mount Rushmore. Running from 1972 to 1983 on CBS, MASH. Running 71 to 79 on CBS, All in the Family.
Ooh.
Running 88 to 97 and a season in 2018 on ABC, Roseanne. Running 88 to 98 with also one season in 2018 on CBS, Murphy Brown. And running 1952 to 1966 on ABC, The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Still the longest running traditional sitcom of all time. And the first one to go 10 plus years.
Really?
And then the last one in the 6 that didn't make it is the one that really had the strongest case to be in the Mount Rushmore when you really break down its rating success, its run length, its critical success. But it doesn't seem to have much of a nostalgic footprint at this point. And that ran on NBC from 1993 to 2004, and that's Frasier.
Yep, huge.
The success of Frasier in the 90s, I think, is vastly overlooked. And when you actually look into it, it's kind of shocking how successful it was.
Definitely.
So those are the 6. Yeah, so those are the 6 out of the top 10 that didn't make it on the Mount Rushmore. So here is the Mount Rushmore. Again, these are not ranked. These are just 4 presented for your pleasure, I guess. The first one, I think, is obvious at this point. And this is the one that benefits most from its cultural footprint rather than its ratings or length of its run or its critical success. And that is a show that ran on NBC from 88 to 98. And that's Seinfeld.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Seinfeld got off to a rough start, which hurts its rating score, you know, the first few seasons. But when you look at its presence in the zeitgeist, even up till now, you just can't deny it.
Yeah, definitely not. It's huge.
The next one that makes the list, this one had a little bit longer run than Seinfeld, actually better ratings, which is hard to believe, about the same amount of critical success, and it also a very, very current, strong cultural footprint. Also NBC from 94 to 04, and that's Friends.
Yeah.
I know. I feel the same.
Can't argue with it, though. Can't argue.
Friends is not my favorite. I don't really get it. I don't like to watch it. It'll make me chuckle once in a while.
Sure.
But again, I'm trying to be fairly objective with my criteria, and it just rises above the rest.
Yep.
The next one ran from – this one benefits greatly from its run length, its ratings, and its critical success. Its cultural footprint, I think, is starting to wane at this point, but it's still pretty well known. And it ran from 1982 to 1993, also on NBC, and that's Cheers.
Yeah, I almost put that on my list. Kind of glad I didn't, but I mean, how do you not have Cheers?
Yeah, it was a powerhouse in its day. The last one on the Mount Rushmore had a shorter run, very good ratings, Very good critical success. And considering how long ago it was, it's unbelievable that its cultural footprint is still as strong as it is. It ran from 1951 to 1957 on CBS, and that's I Love Lucy. So this one doesn't, like I said, it doesn't benefit from a long run length. It was only on for 6 years. Its ratings were very good. Its cultural footprint is unbelievable. People still say you got some explaining to do, and you know, all that sort of thing. And also, it really set a precedent, set a template for what a TV sitcom was. So that also can't be denied. So those are the four. Like I said, there was 10 total sitcoms that rose above the pack. And those are the four that seem to rise even a little bit beyond that. Seinfeld, Friends, Cheers, and I Love Lucy. That's all arguable. Many, many shows have a case to be made, but that's where I came out on it.
I think that's pretty sound. I mean, yeah, sure, you can go back and forth, but you can't say that any of those choices, you know, don't deserve to be in contention. Massive. Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, you could make an argument for all of these, but I came down on Seinfeld, Friends, Cheers, and I Love Lucy, and I think it's a pretty sound list.
Yep. Thankfully, none of my personal favorites are on it.
Well, good. It makes for a good conversation going forward.
Indeed.
So yeah, I guess that's the Mount Rushmore that I came up with. I guess now we go on to what we personally like. And since I've done so much talking so far in this episode, I'll let you start it off.
All right, well, we find ourselves in the shadow of Mount Rushmore, and in the shadows is where I do my best work. So, without further ado, I'm going to present them once again in numerical order from my, I guess, third favorite to my most favorite, and I think that works especially well since we are currently foregoing the 3-2-1 pop portion of our show. So, number three for me, if you can believe it, is a little show called The Simpsons. Now, I know that you're probably saying, I hadn't really thought of stretching the rules to include animated yellow people.
I've never heard a studio audience laugh at a joke on The Simpsons.
It just kept coming up in searches for the word sitcom, and I couldn't deny it, considering that, at least initially, a lot of the personnel involved behind the scenes were involved in so many traditional sitcoms. And they even make references and parodies constantly to that traditional sitcom format. But yeah, that's my number three is The Simpsons. Obviously, it's still going today. It's from 1989 to today. Some of us, maybe even both of us, would kind of wish that weren't the case, necessarily.
We have had discussions with a mutual friend about the current state of The Simpsons, and I'm always the one that kind of apologized for its current state. I'm continuing. Of course, it's not as good as it once was. I find it to be harmlessly enjoyable with the occasional good, solid laugh. And I know that doesn't live up to what it used to be, but I'm okay with it in its current form. And once it's gone for good. So I'm okay with them stretching it out, even if it's getting a little too thin.
Sure. I guess I'll say for my purposes, I'm only counting seasons 1 through 14, just because 14 was the last traditionally animated season and just coincidentally happened to be where I kind of jumped off watching it regularly,
right.
At least new episodes anyway. And I'm going to give my favorite episode/episodes for each of my picks. And for The Simpsons, my favorite episode of all time is called Homer's Enemy, a.k.a. the Frank Grimes episode. Exactly. It's for me.
What a mansion.
For my taste, it's just such a brilliant standalone episode with a one-shot character created entirely to exasperate for the whole length of the episode, and then just to get killed off. It's just beautiful.
I mean, the character Frank Grimes is a commentary on cartoon characters.
Yeah. Oh, it's super meta.
Episodic television. It's a commentary on the actual nonsense. When you break down the number of adventures and the success that Homer has had in spite of his buffoonery, that's what Frank Grimes is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's an indictment of cartoons and the show itself at that point and the character of Homer. And boy, did we...
It's pretty great.
Do we not know how much further Homer was going to be taken than what he was even at that point? That's my number three.
All right, so I will... Again, my list finds itself being messed with because one of my favorites is on the Mount Rushmore. So I'm going to start with that one because we've already talked about it, and that's Seinfeld.
Seinfeld's moving to 9 o'clock on Wednesday. That's really it. That's the whole thing. I got to wear makeup for this. I'm a big Hollywood star.
Beautiful.
It probably would have been my number one favorite, but I'm just kind of shifting it because we already mentioned it. I do think Seinfeld is brilliantly written and conceived. Two meaningless plots, usually in each episode, will converge in ways that you don't see coming. And I think it just is really well written and just it really holds up well. You're never going to be able to say that like their fashion is current and everybody uses a phone with a cord on it and blah, blah, blah. That stuff always is going to happen. There's no way to avoid it. But the comedy notes, I think, really hold up. It just doesn't age. And sometimes you watch some of these older sitcoms or older shows, and as much as you like them or as much as you want to like them, sometimes they just don't hold up. And it's just because of they're from a different era. Time moves. Our tastes change, etc. But Seinfeld does seem to hold up really well.
Absolutely. I think part of that probably is that it was... I mean, it's hard to call Seinfeld realistic in a lot of ways, but it something within the comedy had a very realistic approach, a very, like, real-world approach. And they kind of jumped ahead topically from their time period. You know, you didn't really see sitcoms, especially... making jokes about masturbation or birth control or things like that. So
yeah,
you can watch that in the future, you know, now, and see that it has that tone and that relevance that a lot of things from that era didn't have.
Absolutely. And there was definitely a time where I was not allowed to watch Seinfeld. So,
well, hey, there you go.
Yeah. So that's my sort of number one pick, but I've moved it up my list. So, because we already mentioned it. So back to you.
Moving down to number two for me, we're still kind of in the shadow of Mount Rushmore, because here's one that I was really surprised that you didn't even come up. And that is a non-traditional kind of what sitcoms have moved to, The Office.
Yeah, I was staying away from single camera shows.
Well, evidently my personal list decided to screw all that right up. That makes sense for Mount Rushmore, I think. But because you almost have to have two separate lists in a way.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's a lot of shows. I mean, if I was considering The Office or Parks and Rec or 30 Rock or Community, some of the decisions I've made may have definitely been different.
Yeah, for sure. Well, since this is the second time I've broken the rules, I'm just gonna have to say that exceptions need to be made for personal lists versus the Mount Rushmore list, which is very pure. And in that spirit, I might as well say that The Office ran for 9 seasons on NBC from 2005 to 2013, and it's probably the most rewatchable show in history, and I think Netflix numbers kind of bear that out. It was another one, kind of like Seinfeld, where it struggled to find its footing in the beginning. There's a lot of, I wouldn't want to say hate, but disdain for season one from the internet at large, and I guess the talking heads that speak about such things. But I don't share that hate of season one. Obviously, it's different tonally a little bit, and it's the character of Michael Scott is noticeably different, but not in a way that, like, you know, takes you out of it or anything. I just saw it as a natural evolution.
Right.
So, you know, again, I'm I'm listing my favorite episodes, and I think I have kind of a tie for The Office between an episode called Product Recall, where they find a weird watermark on a bunch of the paper that went out that had two cartoon characters having sex, and it's a really great time for one of my favorite aspects of The Office is when the character of Creed gets to, you know, work his grimy weird little little magic, and this is a great episode for that.
Yeah,
we have a crisis. Apparently a disgruntled employee at the paper mill decided that it would be funny to put an obscene watermark on our 24-pound cream letter stock. 500 boxes has gone out with the image of a beloved cartoon duck performing unspeakable acts upon a certain cartoon mouse that a lot of people like.
Every week I'm supposed to take 4 hours and do a quality spot check at the paper mill. And of course, the 1 year I blow it off, this happens.
And it's tied with another episode called The Booze Cruise, where,
yep,
you know, as like a morale building exercise, Michael takes the office on a booze cruise and chaos ensues.
Yeah.
But it also has enough, it's a balanced episode in the sense that it is chaotic and very, very absurdist with the comedy, but it's got a nice balance with some levity, where Michael and Jim kind of have serious talks, and he gives him some good advice about Pam, and, you know, it's a nice overall episode. So
that's what that's what The Office always kind of did for me. That's why when people say like they've watched The Office 10 times through, what should they watch next? I always point them to Parks and Rec, because Parks and Rec has those moments too, where a show like 30 Rock is kind of snark from beginning to end. And The Office and Parks and Rec, too, both have sort of those moments of warmth and a little bit more heart, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my favorite episodes always tend to be like a microcosm of the series overall. And that concludes my second favorite sitcom pick.
All right. So I guess we're back on my list now. Again, I am sticking to traditional sitcoms. So the next one I'm going in that vein is a show that ran on NBC from 96 to 2001, starring John Lithgow, Kristen Johnson, French Stewart, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And it is Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't see that coming, but I've known this to be huge for you since we were in, well, at least middle school. And yeah.
I love Third Rock from the Sun because it is totally absurd. And most shows that go this direction, not that there's been many, you know, Mork and Mindy and My Favorite Martian, you know.
Right.
But in terms of a sci-fi sitcom, but it was more grounded, I think, than those are. Not quite as zany, but man, I just love watching John Lithgow be silly. I don't know if it might be the crux of it, is just watching John Lithgow like shoot for the moon and overact to be silly, and I love every second of it.
Well, yeah, especially at the time, he hadn't really done much of that.
He was a pretty serious guy. Yeah, serious guy, or you know, he was like the bad guy in Cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah, and Footloose too. He was, you know, the evil preacher who wouldn't let them dance.
That's right. That's right. He comes around, though. He's redeemed in the end.
That's true.
Yeah, Third Rock from the Sun. Love it. It was weird and different, and you know, it coexisted with shows like Seinfeld and Friends, so it definitely stuck out like a sore thumb. And maybe that's why I liked it, because it just seemed weird by comparison, and that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, I guess I would have to say that you almost have to respect the brass at NBC for taking a chance on an anomaly like that in that era of, you know, Seinfeld and Friends and all the classic style sitcoms that were more real world situations.
Right. Absolutely.
Are we officially back to me?
You go right ahead.
My favorite sitcom of all time comes as not a surprise for anybody, and it is Boy Meets World.
We'll be right back.
100% traditional sitcom.
Absolutely.
Oh, 7 seasons from 93 to 2000. Basically, you know, I grew up with the show. I initially found it appealing in 93 because the characters on the show were the same age that we were in real life.
And right.
It was kind of something you didn't really see. It was a primetime sitcom where actual 12-year-old children like us at the time were the focal point. And, you know, that's what kind of hooked me. But then they sort of started taking liberties around season 3 or 4, and the characters were aged and kind of skipped forward to the actors' real-life ages by 2 years.
Puberty hits, man.
Yeah, it was a hell of a puberty. And I don't know, it just felt, you know, it still felt really relatable. And I think it also had a great mix of real life issues and absurd comedy at times. Right. Another thing you didn't really expect to see kind of in a children's focused show where they were tackling, you know, like alcoholism and the pressures of having sex as a teenager and, you know, all kinds of rather serious, like death and you know, having abusive parents and all kinds of things that, you know, aren't funny.
Right. And a lot of that stuff is really what separates it from the sort of side genre of tween sitcoms that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
It does fit into the traditional sitcom template for sure.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, people kind of see it after the fact as this sort of like sitcom spiritual successor to the other Savage Brothers show, The Wonder Years.
Ah, okay.
And there's some parallels to be made, I think, but you know, that Wonder Years definitely didn't have a laugh track.
This is true.
But it just had a big impact on me. I patterned a lot of my own personal humor presentation after the older brother character Eric Matthews. Yeah, it was just weird to start a show as a kid, and when I was done with high school, the show was done. So it was almost like a double whammy of like, well, childhood's over.
Everything ends.
But they did a really good job of kind of, I don't know, bringing people who had been watching it the whole time through the process.
Right.
So to continue the pattern here, my favorite episode is, it's a tie. It is the legendary Halloween-ish episode that is a Scream movie parody. Called And Then There Was Sean, which we've spoken about on this show a time or two before. And it's tied with another episode called Hair Today, Goon Tomorrow, which is about Cory and Topanga like changing their hairstyles and how it affects their perception at school. And, you know, vanity isn't everything. And it also is famous for this dream that Eric has that he's on a detective show called Good Looking Guy.
Eric, it's 4:00. You were sitting there when I left this morning. You were supposed to look for a job.
Oh, I think I found one, Mom. Check it out. All day long, I've been watching crimes on TV, solved by old guys, by fat guys, by guys in wrinkled raincoats. So naturally, it occurs to me, what this world needs is Eric Matthews, good-looking detective.
I'm gonna do so much homework.
So from one good-looking guy to another, those are my 3 favorite sitcoms.
All right, so that brings it to my last pick, which is ostensibly my number one, but that's because I mentioned Seinfeld early because we'd already talked about it. So here it is. It ran from 1995 to 2004 on ABC, and it stars Drew Carey, Diedrich Bader, Ryan Stiles, Krista Miller, Kathy Kinney, and Craigie Ferg himself, Craig Ferguson, and that is the Drew Carey Show.
Moon over Palm Harbor, bring my love to me tonight. Guide her to Cleveland underneath your silvery light. We're going bowling, so don't lose her in Solon. Moon over Palm Harbor tonight.
Yep, another one I remember discussing with you a lot.
Yep, it is, again, one of my favorites. Similar to Third Rock from the Sun because it more than just dabbles in absurdity. It had very sort of typical sitcom-y tropes along the way, but the characters played by Diedrich Bader and Ryan Stiles were not human characters. They are cartoon characters with more flesh, let's be clear. And so was Kathy Kinney's character, for sure, Mimi. And even Craig Ferguson's character, too. The only human characters on the show were played by Drew Carey and Krista Miller. Not only was the show full of absolutely absurd characters, but they had special episodes which were so... I mean, I don't want to overstate them as, you know, but they were different. They were definitely maybe groundbreaking. At the very least, they were taking chances. They did live episodes. They did musical episodes. They did episodes that took on some of the qualities of Drew Carey's other show at the time, Whose Line Is It Anyway? They'd be doing a scene in a scripted show, and somebody would call out, change it, and they'd have to deliver a different line.
Right.
on a live telecast. So I love that kind of shit, and I love the Drew Carey show for being willing to do it, especially from a guy, Drew Carey, who's not exactly like a fantastic actor. The fact that he was willing to be like, yeah, we'll do song and dance numbers, that's awesome. I'm all in, all day long on the Drew Carey show. And I actually did rewatch some episodes recently, because you don't always get to rewatch these things that you think are your favorites, and sometimes it can be disappointing. And I rewatched some episodes, and it was great. It was great.
Definitely. What an innovative and entertaining expansion of, you know, the traditional sitcom.
Probably the word I was looking for, innovative.
Another one I remember was, I want to say that they had like, maybe it wasn't just Drew Carey, but I remember the Drew Carey part of it. There was almost like a scavenger hunt in an episode where you had to like, you know, find something in the background or like,
right,
wait for somebody to say a certain thing in a line, and like it tied into a real world contest. You had to like find all these things and then, you know, send in, you catch them all and send it in, and you know, you could win I forget what it was, some kind of go to the show live or something, meet people. I don't know what it was, but the scavenger hunt in a sitcom aspect is pretty cool.
Yeah, to get that engagement. And they may have even been taking advantage of the internet at that time, which was
right.
Would have been groundbreaking as well. I don't know for sure about that. I'd have to look into it. But again, that would be groundbreaking at that time. The internet was definitely a thing by the time Drew Carey show was around, and certainly by the time it was over. But, you know, a lot of people who were writing and producing and running shows like that were not quite up to speed on things like that.
Yeah, didn't it have, at least in the very early seasons and episodes, I mean, it was a pretty traditional sitcom, and didn't it kind of evolve into the wackiness and grow into experimenting?
Yeah. For sure, absolutely. Yeah, you saw more and more of it, so that it became traditional that every year there would be these sort of like outside-the-box episodes that went beyond the tropes of sitcoms, and I think that those got to be more and more frequent as time went on.
Yeah, I remember when it first came on, I kind of dismissed it as... like, I mean, I don't want to watch this. This is just real life Dilbert, you know, the comic strip. That's what I thought it was supposed to be. And then, you know, it becomes apparent that, like, wow, this is something else. And they, you know, even with like the show opening and the theme song, they got creative and more
well, big production. Especially when they went to especially when they went to Cleveland Rocks.
Yeah.
You know, I like the initial intro, just Moon Over Parma, but. Once they went to Cleveland Rocks, they definitely were announcing themselves as way different.
Right. All this energy calling me back where it comes from. It's such a crude attitude. It's back where it belongs. All the little chicks with the crimson lips go. In a lot of ways, I feel like a show like that 70s show kind of owes something to the Drew Carey show.
I would say the vibe is probably similar. Yeah. Yep. I'm on board with that. That's all I got, man.
Okay. Well, that brings our discussion of sitcoms to a close. Our Mount Rushmore is set in stone. What would be on yours, dear listener? So while you ponder that, if these are indeed the twilight years for the classic American sitcom, I suppose that we will have to go find something else to amuse ourselves with. As always, I have been your friend Claude.
And I've been just Jamie.
And we'll catch up with you on the next Nerd Bomber podcast.
Later!
Mom, Dad, I did what you said. I got a job.
Oh, Eric, we're proud of you.
Hey, what kind of job did you get? Check it out.
When a crime breaks out, the big girl shouts.